Michael has been a member of the United Homa Nation Tribal Council since 1994. And through public talks and writings, he is an outspoken advocate of Homa culture and political sovereignty.
I've been asked to speak a little bit tonight about sovereignty, and some of the other panelists have covered some of the issues, and you know, the Marshall decisions have been mentioned a couple times. And, you know, I've heard and read about these concepts, delegated sovereignty and inherent sovereignty, and the Marshall fantasy, as I call it, of domestic dependent nations and wardship. But my perspective is a little different in that I'm not an academic. I define myself as a trawler son. My father was a commercial fisherman, that traditional Homa lifestyle that Brenda talked about. I spent most of my youth with him trawling and trapping. And so that's my foundation, and if you will, the lens through which I view the rest of the world. And so it works that way with this concept of sovereignty. And so I thought about this topic, and I said, well, what does sovereignty mean to me as the son of a Homa fisherman? What does it mean to the everyday Homa fisherman and trapper in our communities? And none of those concepts are debated or talked about. And in fact, the whole idea of sovereignty is really not something that's part of the general conversation, but it's the reality of our existence. The end of sovereignty, despite what all the terms they give it and all the arguments, the end of sovereignty, the if you follow that line of thought, would be independence, would be freedom. And I grew up in a Homa community, and in spite of the fact that it was part, you know, surrounded by the modern world, and you know, I came of age in the 70s, and I experienced the end of that. You know, growing up with my dad, as a Homa fisherman, you were free. You had your own equipment, you had your own boat, you had the traps that we did in the wintertime, and you made your own living at your own pace, you took care of your family. At the time, there wasn't much government oversight. If you wanted to pay taxes because you desired to maybe have some Social Security when you got older, you paid as much, you know, you paid based on whatever you felt like reporting. But if you didn't want to pay anything, a lot of tribal members didn't pay anything at the time. So that was, and unfortunately, because of the turn of events, coastal erosion, my friend down there talked a lot about globalization, and unfortunately, from our perspective, a lot of the multinational corporations that are involved in this globalized business of stealing indigenous land and spoiling indigenous land, a lot of them got their start in Homa territory. You know, I read about oil companies in places like Ecuador and the things that they're doing there, and I realize that those companies, Texaco and what was Humble Oil and Standard Oil, learned these processes in South Louisiana, and they developed these tools, if you will, on Homa land and on Homa people. And so we've been facing a century of economic exploitation of our homeland. But in spite of that, we were able to maintain this lifestyle by hook or by crook. You know, it got harder as the years went on. When my grandfather was alive, most of the marshland was free and open. You could trap anywhere. You could fish anywhere. 1920s, the landowners came in and began buying it up and then releasing it out to our people for trapping rights. And so by the time my daddy was growing up, you actually had to pay a lease fee on land that was originally ours. And then the oil companies came in the 30s, and that process accelerated. And our oral histories are full of stories of land loss. You know, they would come in and our people speak the Langhomme, which is a mixture of our old language and the French language. And the majority of them were illiterate in English or in French. And so they would come in and say, look, if you sign this paper, we'll pay you $20 a year to use your land. And what it actually was a quick plan. And so, and that was just one method. There were a variety of methods. But in spite of all this, we continued until the process became overwhelming. In 1904, they dammed Bayou Lafourche, which began the process that we know today as coastal erosion. And so today, we're in a situation where literally the land under our feet is disappearing. Our communities are washing away. And the lifestyle that we were able to maintain in the midst of this intense capitalistic exploitation, we're not able to maintain it anymore. Because what enabled us to do it up until then was that the land always sustained us. The same thing with hurricanes. Brendan mentioned that we had two back-to-back hurricanes in 2005 and two more again this year. We faced hurricanes for thousands of years. But we were always able to recover because the land absorbed most of the blow, and the land enabled us to recover. But the land is not there anymore. What happens when the tide comes up at the edge of the Gulf in a matter of minutes? It's up in the home of communities. There's no buffer anymore, and so that's the sovereignty that we've lost. We've lost the ability to live free, and so. The forces of globalization that we were able to weave in and out of and maintain our lifestyle now has become overwhelming. And so now we have to find bigger and more complicated solutions. We faced this before. In 1803, when the Americans came in, one of the things that differentiated them from the French and the Spanish was their particularly in Louisiana, was their avarice for land, in that the French and the Spanish were no angels by any means, but they respected the tribes' land rights. The Americans didn't. And so that began the process of us going down to these lower bayou settlements and staying there and moving from what we were before then, which was essentially agricultural people, going down into the lower bayous and going back into a more hunter-gatherer type society, where we became predominantly fishermen and hunters. And so we faced this kind of life-changing situation before, and now we're facing it again. And don't know what the answers are, but I know that as a people, we were strong enough to face it once before, and we're going to be strong enough to face it again.
Thank you.